Hi, this is Frank. This is my show, CDM Cyclist, and I have another great interview for you today. Perhaps just like you, I'm following several bicycle blogs and tuning in on Facebook. I've got a lot of Facebook friends that are bicycle-oriented. Well, that's how I met today's guest, and I like this interview. It's a little bit different.
Right, it just begins. This intersection is where we're going to put a roundabout, and then across the roadway, we're going to use the existing edge of pavement to edge of pavement and repurpose it from two northbound lanes and one southbound lane to one lane travel lane in each direction. And with the added space, we're going to put bike lanes, a trail on the west side, and sidewalk on the east side, so we don't impact the Buena Vista Lagoon environmental area, but we provide access for human beings across the lagoon to connect Oceanside and Carlsbad in a safer manner for everybody. So it'll still provide access for motorists, but it'll also now provide a safer access for bicyclists and pedestrians and strollers and everything else.
Makes me think of like a classic traffic calming too, Brian.
It will be, and really right now it's a suggested 35 miles per hour across there, and oftentimes motorists are going faster than that, and they're coming into our village, which is really bicycle and pedestrian oriented. So the roundabout can act as an entry monument feature to say, hey, you've arrived in Carlsbad and you need to drive a different speed and look out for people and just slow down right before you come into the Army Navy Academy and all of our business district down here. So
I can relate to that, because in Newport Beach, of course, we get a lot of visitors from out of town. I'm always often concerned that as they come into town, they're not prepared for the kind of, what would you say, motorist behaviors that we're expecting. They're not used to riding around cyclists. So that's kind of the same theme, huh?
Well, and in Carlsbad, you know, we're really wanting to make our village a bicycle and pedestrian destination and our coast a bicycle and pedestrian destination. So we've already made some interim changes in our striping along the coast, but we have bigger visions of what we can do along our coasts, and we're working on a South Carlsbad coastal corridor project that will really reframe the whole corridor more for people. Cars don't like when other cars are around them, but people love and are happier when people are around each other. And so we move thousands of people on our coast highway, which we call Carlsbad Boulevard, and many of them are on bikes, walking and jogging and enjoying our sunsets and our beaches. And, you know, we want that experience to be enhanced so that more people can do it and enjoy it. And walking and biking can become the primary mode of transportation, or, you know, you think twice about driving your car into the village area. You know, some of our bike racks, you know, we just installed 200 bike racks around our village and, you know, six or seven different bike corrals, which is just a group of bike racks. And, you know, our merchants are now starting to see that, wow, biking does mean business. Biking equals business. And we just added 200 customers to the village area for parking. And so when people say, well, we don't have enough parking, you can add 200 parking spaces for under $50,000, where 200 vehicle parking spaces, you're looking at probably $15 or $20 million. So
Laguna Beach has got a $40 million parking garage with 200 cars in it. You've heard of that one?
Well, some of our most expensive real estate in Carlsbad is for free parking, and I'm not against free parking, but there could be better uses of some of our public spaces, and that's what we're really doing in Carlsbad with our new general plan mobility element and our general plan update, is looking at how do we activate the waterfront, how do we revitalize and rejuvenate our village area and create new economic opportunities and destinations and lifestyle opportunities for people in Carlsbad, whether you're a resident or a tourist or one of our neighboring cities and coming and enjoying Carlsbad. So
the bike racks make me think of, like, that was like a low-hanging fruit opportunity kind of.
Oh, bike racks are the easiest low-hanging fruit. And we've had public works directors from other cities come here on vacation. And, you know, like the city of Whittier, their public works director was down here, and he went back and ordered bike racks for his city that's a Bike Whittier. These are the same style bike racks that when I was in Fresno, we did iBike Fresno and the Tower District, and we created custom bike racks that highlighted biking in those two areas, and you know, they're popping up all over the place, and we created a lot of synergy with them in the village area. And now people that are, you know, within a few miles of the downtown area are just riding their bikes to the downtown area, and they go right up to the business because it's VIP parking for bike riders. And you know, when we're moving 3,000 recreational riders up and down the Coast Highway, whether it's for tourism or for exercise, you know, we had Tower 37, which installed a bike rack over there right next to Board and Brew, which is a new restaurant, right next to their patio. So now people can come right off of the Coast Highway and ride into their bike corral and sit there out on the patio and have a burrito or a sandwich or and a beer or something. So those are the kind of things that, you know, people are starting to see, wow, these people are bringing their bikes into the village. It's not like we have to attract them, but we have to accommodate them. And what is it that they need? And they want bike parking where they can visibly watch their bikes and enjoy our village area.
Well, Brian, I suppose it's time to introduce you. Would you state your name and your position with the city?
My name is Brian Jones, and I'm the Deputy Transportation Director for the city of Carlsbad. And we're really in a transition period in Carlsbad where we're really probably 95% built out on our transportation infrastructure, whether it's our roadways or train tracks and buses. But now we're looking at them differently and figuring out how do we, instead of just collecting cars, how do we connect people on our roadways? And we heard from our Envision Carlsbad community outreach process about people are really wanting to be connected. People are wanting to active, healthy lifestyle in Carlsbad. And so we have an opportunity with our roadways to create that.
And it shows. Now, how long have you been here in Carlsbad, Brian?
I started in June of 2011, so it's a little bit over 2 years.
Do they still call you the new guy?
They still call me the new guy. I have guys on my staff that have been here for 33 years. Oh, yeah. So, and you know, not surprisingly, some of my staff, the last couple years of doing projects more for people has been some of the most rewarding times of their careers. And they'll often tell me that because when you do things for people, people call you and compliment you. When you do things for cars, cars can't call you and say thank you. And so cars call you and complain because their drivers are complaining. But when you provide a pedestrian crosswalk at a school, all of a sudden you'll get moms and dads and the PTA and the principal calling and saying thank you. When you do traffic calming in a residential neighborhood, you'll get the neighbors calling you and saying thank you. That process worked and we got a good result. People are driving slower on our streets. It's safer in our neighborhoods. Those are some of the compliments we're hearing. And so when you look at it solely from a vehicle standpoint, you don't really get the full opportunities of projects that you can develop. And so when you look at who are our customers are the 107,000 people that live here and the more than 4,100 hotel rooms in Carlsbad that people come and are tourists here and our businesses, those are all our customers. So when those people say, you know, we want active, healthy lifestyles, we want a community that's connected and a small town beach community feel, well, there's a lot of things that we can do that can enhance those. Now, we're not doing a one size fits all on every street. We're looking at how people are using the street today and what are the opportunities for them to use that street in the future. And so sometimes it's observing what are people doing today, and sometimes it's identifying what could people do tomorrow if they had the infrastructure to do it. And so kind of thinking about it from a humanistic psychological behavioral standpoint of what would people do? And often people want to do something safe, but they're also willing to take the shortest path of least resistance. And so if they can identify a place where there's least resistance, that's where they're going to cross the roadway. And so if there's things that we can do to enhance that and connect them with their destinations and make it easier, rather than saying, well, you need to walk up to the traffic signal, which is 500 or 1,000 feet away, when they can walk 60 feet across the roadway, they're going to walk right across the roadway.
Well, you're paying attention to that. I like the sounds of that. I like the way you described the people in your department, how satisfying their jobs are today with the feedback they're getting. It's not that way in every city, right? There's resistance to change is pretty common, too. But it sounds like you had an advantage or not so much resistance to change here in Carlsbad. Why was that?
I think some of the successes here in Carlsbad are we really went out and asked the people in the community what they wanted, and we listened and we heard. And so we identified the 9 community values. And from that, then it was, how do we interpret those 9 community values and put them into place? And what are things that we can do to facilitate that? You know, some of it required doing some pilot projects. You know, people aren't as scared about something when you call it a pilot project.
I know, that's a good one. Or an experiment, right?
And so, you know, we tested out. We've tested out 9-foot lanes, travel lanes. We've tested out 10-foot travel lanes.
I was going to ask, because they look narrow. I took a little ride on Carlsbad Boulevard. Yeah. Those are narrower lanes?
You know, most motorists don't realize that they're narrower. And there was a little bit of pushback because we thought there were some people that thought collisions would occur because of the heavier vehicles and whatnot. But what we realize is when you design it for the smaller vehicle rather than the largest vehicle on the roadway, the larger vehicles drive slower and the smaller vehicles drive the speed that you design the roadway for. When you design it for the largest vehicle, the largest vehicles drive at the speed limit, and the smaller vehicles often exceed the speed limit. So it's really an engineering and enforcement mindset of, if we can slow the motorist down based on how we design the roadway, then we don't have to do as much enforcement on that roadway. And, you know, we're seeing an impact when we narrow roadways down to 9 or 10 foot lanes of 3 to 4 mile per hour reduction. So from 37 down to 33, which allows us to reduce the posted speed limit from 35 down to 30. Those are things that improve the safety because when you are driving at 40 miles an hour and a collision occurs, because we're all human and collisions occur because people make mistakes, we're human. But when you're doing it at 40 miles per hour, you have about a 90 to 100% chance of not walking away from that collision, where at 20 miles per hour, you have a 80 to 90% chance of walking away from that collision. And so if we can get speeds, not saying we're trying to get all speeds down to 20 miles per hour, but if we can get them down from 40 miles per hour, we enhance the safety, and then everybody can make it home to their families for dinner at night. In the United States, 36,000 people die on our roadways, and a greater percentage of them are bicyclists and pedestrians because we often design our roadways for motorists rather than for people.
What I hear in lots of places is you just can't put up speed limits that announce lower speeds. That just doesn't have the same effect.
I've ridden with a number of motorists, and I say, how do you like our new overlay project or our street maintenance project? And they go, well, something feels different. I feel like I need to drive slower. Did you change the length of the stripe? And I'm like, no. Did you change this? Well, no. And I said, they go, but you added a bike lane. How did you add a bike lane on this roadway? And I said, well, we added the bike lane by narrowing the travel lanes. And so it's just resurfacing and repurposing the roadway, a term that we coined when I was in Fresno. Maybe somebody else coined it, but we used it a lot there. But when we do pavement overlay and slurry seal projects, it's a great opportunity to rethink the roadway. It's kind of a counterintuitive approach. When you make a roadway feel less safe to a motorist, they change their speeds and then are driving at a safer speed. It's kind of the irony of, we build streets wider so that emergency vehicles can respond to collisions that are created by wider streets. You know, and the same philosophy is, if you design a travel way just like Caltrans does for freeways, you know, most cities have 12-foot travel lanes. Well, that's all the travel lane is out on a freeway, and yet people feel safe to drive 55 to 80 miles an hour up there. And we don't really want people driving 55 to 80 miles an hour in our communities, because that's not really a safe speed when you're interacting with people. And it's not really a very economically beneficial speed for businesses, because when you're driving 55 or 70 miles an hour, you can't see that business as you're going down the corridor. That's why auto malls want big digital feedback signs because they can attract your attention on the freeway with those. That's why McDonald's Golden Arches is so big, because that draws your attention to it as a motorist. Where
I hadn't thought about it that way, Brian, but you make a good point there. So to be able to do these things on Carlsbad Boulevard, like in my neighborhood, would consider it Coast Highway. Carlsbad took control of that stretch of the road. Caltrans handed it over to you.
Well, we actually back in the 50s or 60s that Carlsbad Boulevard became the city of Carlsbad's, and then we changed the name to from the Coast Highway to Carlsbad Boulevard, and so we've had it for a long time, and we've always had speeding concerns on it. Yet we have some of the greatest beaches in San Diego County and Southern California down here, and we have a great opportunity for people to recreate along our coastway. We have some of the most beautiful beaches to ride along, and with scenic vistas and corridors. It's a great opportunity to highlight some of those things and get more people using them and access to them. And so what we're finding is we put a whole bunch of bike racks down at the beach, and where we have parking issues down at the beach, now people are saying, well, I can put my surfboard on my bike instead of my car, and I can ride down the beach, and I know there's a bike rack spot for me, or I can lock my bike up down there where I'm not sure if there's a parking spot for my vehicle down there. So it's kind of a different approach. And we're seeing a lot more families and kids riding their bikes in the village. The other day we were down in the village, and a mother and her two daughters rode about 7 blocks from a neighboring residential neighborhood, and they rode their bike over to Swirlicious to get ice cream. And I asked them, I said, how far away do you live? And they said, 7 blocks. And I said, is this something you guys do a lot? And they go, well, now that there's a bike corral right in front of Swirlicious, we've been doing it once a week. And it's our mother-daughter time together, and we ride our bikes over here. So there's one less car in the village, which creates one more parking space for other visitors to the village. And yet the businesses are expanding with their customer base.
That quality time can't be discounted either, huh? Brian, how about you were in Fresno, and now you're here. What lured you down here?
Well, it was an opportunity to come down and live the California lifestyle on the beach in Carlsbad. And so we relocated down here 2 years ago, and it was a transition period. But the people down here are great, just as they are in Fresno.
Fresno friends come and visit.
We have a lot of I've probably helped out the our transit occupancy tax with tourism, because we've had a lot of friends from Fresno come down and visit us down here, whether it's for Legoland or for any of the other attractions in the San Diego region, or just coming to our beaches. So, you know, when you think of Carlsbad, you think of Legoland and the beaches, and we have some great beaches down here.
Now, Brian, you're one of a growing cadre, let's say, of very bicycle-oriented transportation people. How did that process start for you?
Well, when I was in Fresno, we had an opportunity to do a bicycle master plan. And many people do bicycle master plans to do a checkbox on grant submittals. We took a different approach, and we did a bicycle master plan to change a culture within a community. You know, I love working with the bicycle advocacy organizations and with the people in the community. And so when I saw that there was an opportunity to improve health, to improve the environment, to improve economic prosperity, these are all things that any city is trying to reduce their environmental footprint and expand their economic footprint. And these are great things for communities to be engaged in. And so we created with businesses, we created an iBike Fresno campaign, and we just started seeing the culture change. And I saw how beneficial it was to people. I'd see grandmas that were almost using walkers that got on a tricycle, and then 2 months later didn't need to use the walker anymore. I saw overweight people lose 30 to 100 pounds by riding their bikes just around their neighborhoods to get exercise. It's a very low impact way. I saw mobility increase because people that had lost their driver's license for whatever reason, whether it was their sight or vision or health or even a DUI, they could get around a community on a bicycle. And when you think about people and their disposable income, this last month I gave myself a challenge on my Pedego bike, and I rode 30 days in a row to work. And that was my personal challenge to myself, and I did it. Well, I saved almost $300 in gas in that time period from just my commute to work and around work. So you sit there and you go, well, what can I do now with $300 extra? Do I save it? Do I take my wife out on a date? Do I go on a vacation? Can I go buy a new toy that I've wanted? You know, what is it that money can go towards?
And I guess then Pedego ought to be saying that you could pay for the bike in a year, huh?
I did the return on investment, being the engineer that I am, and I equated with my gym membership and my gas usage that it was probably in the order of 6 to 7 months that the bike was going to be paid off. So that was maybe 10 months on the far end range. But when you think about all the stuff that you do in your car, I'm now going about, besides when I drive with my wife somewhere, if it's just a solo trip on myself, I'm going about 5 to 7 days in between car usages. So my truck spends a lot of time on the driveway, which is okay because I'm having fun riding on my streets and in Carlsbad. And, you know, our new infrastructure makes it really easy. And there's more bike riders out there every day riding the bike. And I felt like I needed to start walking the talk or riding the talk, where I was building infrastructure, but then I wasn't riding my bike. And it was kind of I felt kind of hypocritical of do as I say, not as I do. And so I wanted to start doing as I said. And it's been fun. It's been rewarding. And more people are starting to go, well, electric cars, electric bikes, there's a new opportunity out there.
We're Facebook friends, Brian.
Yes.
And I enjoy your commentary there. And you saw my electric bike, my Pedego. I was going grocery shopping, and that's when we started a little dialogue anyway. But how about for you? You are biking more now. How about other times in your life? As a kid, at college, riding a bike then too?
Well, this is the irony, is I saw some statistic where, I think it was a generation ago, 50% of the kids walked or biked to school, and now it's under 10%, just a generation ago. Later in the same generation, childhood obesity has more than tripled, and our test scores are having difficulty. Well, when you drop a kid off that's half asleep at school, their blood isn't pumping in there. They need that physical fitness before they can learn. Their brain works better with oxygen and blood in it. Well, when I was a kid, you got to school early to get a good bike parking space in the bike racks, and there would be hundreds of bikes in the bike rack. Now I go to elementary schools and there's 10, 15 bikes in the bike rack, and the schools haven't changed location. The kids going to the schools haven't changed, but there's this perception that it's unsafe now in generation. And I think there's a lot of things that contribute to that, but a lot of it's perception. You know, I used to ride a half mile to school, K through six. Now my 7th and 8th grade became 2.5 or 3 miles away, and so we carpooled over there. And then in high school, we carpooled as well. You know, we get home, and our bike meant freedom as kids. You know, we just had to be back in time for dinner. If we rode to our friend's house, our mom didn't have to take us over to our friend's house. We rode our bikes over there, and you'd have 4 or 5 people all riding together. And sometimes you just ride around the neighborhood just to ride around the neighborhood to be seen with each other.
Well, let's stay on Facebook just for a second. Brian, I observe many times you're posting a message. I label them positive thinking, looking at the glass half full.
Well, I'm kind of an optimist, but I'm also realistic, so I don't get too high up in the clouds. But our reality is basically our thoughts, and our happiness is our reality minus our expectations. Some people say, well, lower your expectations. In other cases, change how your reality is thought about. I think there's a lot of opportunities, especially in local governments and in communities for people to take on a leadership role in adding value to their communities. And in doing so, thinking about things a little differently and challenging the status quo and asking the question why. And Simon Sinek is I'm a big fan of his, and he always says start with why. Don't start with how or what, because that's what people fight over. If you start with why and people agree on the why you're doing something, the hows and the whats will fall into place. So when people can start thinking about their reality different and people can feel comfortable and safe to challenge the status quo, then they can be innovative and creative. When they're encouraged to not think outside the box, but think as if a box doesn't exist, then they can challenge the status quo and say, well, why do we need this process? It doesn't result in what we want. And so if it doesn't result in what we want, we either need to change the process or we need to do a pilot project to figure out, well, if we do this, is this what we want? And so I think it allows experimentation. It allows people to try things where I think our civil engineering and our traffic engineering profession, and I'm in both of those categories, so, and I'm also a planner, so I can lump all those categories into play. I think we got a little complacent and we said, okay, we know everything now. And so when we did our general plans in the 70s and 80s in California, we all kind of did the same thing and we copied each other without really identifying how our communities were different or unique. So a lot of these policies created communities that often looked alike. And now you're starting to see communities trying to figure out how do we differentiate ourselves from other people so that businesses want to locate here, that creative talent wants to locate here, that people want to be here, whether it's for tourism, whether it's for business, whether it's for jobs, whether it's for schools, you know, all those different components. And I think our thoughts dictate how we live our lives. And if there's an opportunity to look at something differently, you know, we often protect what we know, and it's just a learned behavior. Then we mimic those learned behaviors. And if we start saying, well, why do we have 12-foot travel lanes? Oh, because a freeway building agency identified 12-foot lanes in the 50s as the standard. And then those freeway engineers became local community engineers and brought their knowledge from the freeway departments, Department of Transportations, to the local Department of Transportations. And now people are saying, but if you go back to before the freeway agency, there was a book called ASHTO that allowed 9 to 12-foot travel lanes. And it's not a one-size-fits-all standard. It's a what are the land uses around this project? What do you want the design speed of this project to be or this roadway to be? A lot of people say, well, people on bikes aren't customers. Come visit Carlsbad Village.
Proving that wrong, yes. Huh?
I really think you never know what you're going to say and who it's going to impact. Sometimes I'll get instant messages from a post that I make, a positive post, and they're like, I was really struggling with that, and I appreciate that. And then other people will challenge it. And it's good dialogue. And having the conversations and changing the language allows us to change the culture and allows local governments to better serve our communities. It's not what is the state of the practice. It's what is the next practice. How are we going to be innovative? How are we going to be creative to serve our people better and to create communities where people feel connected, where businesses feel connected? And that's really what inspires me.
It's very well said, Brian. So anybody that likes a bicycle should come to Carlsbad and see what you're doing here, huh?
Well, you know, anybody that likes hanging out with people should come to Carlsbad because we have some of the greatest people in Carlsbad. And some of those great people are starting great businesses. They're enjoying our beaches and they're our customers. So it's not just about the bicycle. It's more about creating a community for people. When you design a community around people and bicycles, there's more of a sense of community than when you design a community around the automobile. you know, in Carlsbad, a lot of, you know, we're a newer city, so we have a lot of bike lanes and sidewalks already, but it's how do you make those bike lanes and sidewalks better? How do you enhance them? And the nice thing is we have a lot of infrastructure that was built to a level service C or D level service. And now there might be an opportunity to repurpose those roadways, just like what we're doing across the Buena Vista Lagoon, to say, well, rather than two northbound lanes and one southbound lane, just have one lane in each travel lane in each direction, add bike lanes, add sidewalk on the east side, and add a trail on the west side, all within the same footprint that we used to have for automobiles. But now people are welcome and encouraged and invited to be on that roadway. There's this old theory about rails to trails, but what about roads to trails? If we have extra 12 feet of pavement on a roadway, is there an opportunity to repurpose that roadway to have a trail that people can exercise on, that kids can walk to school on, you know? And you're going to have to think strategically about how to make those investments and how to make those connections. But that's where we do a lot of master planning. And I think a lot of times we do what's safe rather than creating a vision that inspires people. So we have to get over that fear of failing so that we can start trying and experimenting and innovating in our communities.
Oh, that's very nice, Brian. Thank you for spending the time with me today.
I like what you're doing. I love your slowing a new vision of urban life where people matter more than motor vehicles. And I think that's very apropos where we have to get into communities. You know, we put our garage doors as the welcome to our house now, rather than the front door or a porch. That just shows us how much we've gotten away from people in our neighborhoods to cars in our neighborhoods. So I think there's an opportunity, and I think we're going to start seeing more communities look at transportation as an opportunity for economic redevelopment in their communities. And it's simple things. And sometimes we need to go more out on a limb and try things. And we're going to be pleasantly surprised. Now, just like any baseball player, they fail. They don't hit a home run every time. But sometimes you can get a whole bunch of singles to add up to a home run or at least a run. And the same thing with a community. Sometimes you can have a bunch of singles that create some synergy in an area where it's not a home run. It's not a big solution project. It's not a high-ticket item. I think in Carlsbad, we've done probably a dozen and a half or two dozen projects for not that much money, because we do it when we're doing pavement overlay projects. We go find active transportation grant funding from SANDAG. We create these synergies of looking at things differently. And, you know, changing striping is a $10,000 to $25,000 solution. Adding a right turn lane and a left turn pocket, that can be a $300,000 solution. Putting in bike racks could be a $50,000 solution. Putting in a parking garage could be a $40 million solution. And you just start sitting there going, well, if we really want to leverage our economic resources and do things a little differently, there's a huge opportunity in our communities if we just look at things a little differently.
Thank you very much, Brian.
Thank you.
We're back in the studio and time to share a few thoughts before we say goodbye. I'd like to invite you to come by the website, cdmcyclist.com. It's CDM as in Corona Del Mar. It's a neighborhood within the city of Newport Beach, California. That's where I do most of my riding. I'm a utility cyclist, I guess. I'd be a commuter if I had a job, but this stage of life, I'm not punching a clock anymore. I'm spending time on my bicycle. Perhaps just like you, wish I was spending more. I use my bike to run errands and go to meetings and try to integrate it into my lifestyle. Corona Del Mar is a beautiful place to do that. You come by the website, you'll see I have many other interviews, just like today's with Brian, right at your fingertips. It really just depends how much time you want to invest. You'll get quite an education. You'll gain tremendous insights into the state of the whole bicycle advocacy movement here by listening. It's just that simple. I'd like you to leave a comment behind. Brian would love to hear from you. I would too.
and I have a PayPal donate button on the site. Well, that's it for today's show. Thanks so much for listening, and good day.